The day of the fire, it was fast.
About 24 hours ago, where I'm standing was a sea of fire. Many homes that people had lived in for many years here in Malden simply gone. Let's take a look.
It's right around noon on Labor Day 2020. It raced along here, sometimes up to 70 miles an hour. It was covering, you know, pretty much everything in eyesight. So with the heavy, dark smoke, with flames, with embers flying, and those fast winds pushing it, it was pretty disorienting and really scary.
I thought we'd be back. Because the fire department's so good out here, you know. They get the fires out every year.
We lived in an RV for 28 days, and we didn't have water or power for 16 days.
We're talking about a fire that destroyed these towns in a matter of hours. It was like nothing I'd ever seen before. From the very beginning, this community wanted to rebuild.
Well, you have this opportunity. It's a once in a 50-year opportunity to remake the whole town, or once in a 1,000-year opportunity to remake an entire town from the start. But dealing with the trauma of, you know, my own, of my neighbors, my friends, people affected by this fire, that's the really difficult part.
From KUOW, you're listening to Rebuilding Malden, 1 year after wildfire, a Labor Day special exploring the disaster recovery and the safety nets that support and fail communities in distress. My name is Zeki Hamid, and I'm the Director of Community Engagement at KUOW, and I'm here with KUOW producer Alec Cowan. On Labor Day last year, the towns of Malden and Pine City burnt to the ground. 85% of buildings were gone. Residents were displaced, and relief was delayed for months. But why? What stopped relief from reaching these towns? And when you're given the opportunity to totally rebuild your home, what would you change? Before we can answer these questions, we need to understand where we are. Alec, what can you tell me about the town of Malden?
So if you were to look at a map and try to find Malden and Pine City, you probably wouldn't be able to find it. These are two small, adjoined towns tucked in the hills of the Palouse of eastern Washington, and between the two of them, there are about 400 residents. But Malden is the town proper in this area, and it saw near total destruction from this fire. When I visited, town council member Scott Hokanson gave me a tour.
This is my home site right here. So yeah, I moved here because of this view, you know, and I had a craftsman home in the country for the price of maybe a new Camry.
There's one main road that goes through Malden, and most of the town is what Scott's showing me right now, a hole in the ground where homes used to be. His is right in the center of one of the main residential areas.
So this house was saved because the owner, after the fire, I saw him, he came in, came through the fire line somehow, and got his hose. The back of his house was on fire, and he was able to put it out with a garden hose. He did that because he didn't have insurance.
Right now, a lot of folks are in trailers right next to where their homes used to be. But it's been a year since the wildfire, so you also see for sale signs. And new ones are cropping up frequently.
You can see a lot of the home sites here that have been leveled. So my neighbor's... I guess my neighbor's selling. These are some good neighbors. They lost their home and... Yeah. So that's going to happen quite a bit, I think. I think people will be selling because it's too difficult to come back.
But you also see signs of recovery. Construction crews moving debris, laying plans for new buildings in town. As difficult as life over the past year has been, Scott is staying, and he's planning to rebuild. Because this is a community that's had to stick together, even before the fire.
You know, we're a long way from anywhere out here, and your car has to be in good working order. And if it isn't, then, you know, your neighbors will help you out. And if you forget something, you know, it's 45 minutes to the store. And sometimes it's 45 minutes if police are going to respond. So you really do have to depend on your neighbors and be a good neighbor, no matter what. No matter what your feelings or thoughts are towards other people. Everybody waves out here. So that's why one of the reasons I bought is everyone waves at each other.
So, Alec, this is a place that I haven't heard of before. So can you tell me a little bit about what the town was like before the fire?
So like so many little towns across the American West, Malden started because it was a stop on the railroads.
It was what they called a home terminal.
Okay.
So you had a train that come from Othello to Malden. They change crews. Then they'd go from Malden to Avery, change crews.
And I heard a lot of this history from a guy named Bob Law.
I am the only law in town.
The only law?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my name.
Oh.
Last name's Law.
And he's probably one of the longest tenured Maldenites that I met. He's been in the town for about 65 years, and he originally came to town because his father was working on the railroad. And he, too, for most of his career, worked on the railroad.
I worked on the section, on the maintenance, where you go out and you put in ties and that kind of stuff. I had the fun stuff.
And so that was kind of the first part of Malden's history for about 70 or 80 years. It was this railroad hub. But then in the 1970s, the railroad company eliminated Malden from their train stops. And this became one of the first kind of big existential moments for Malden.
Things really changed after that.
How so?
Well, a lot of people that lived here worked out of here. And if they got to move to a different town, so that opened up the town to a lot of vacant houses. And a different class of people moved in. You know, it became more or less a retirement community and low income because the houses were cheap.
It seems that Malden had gone through a big change, but leading up to the fire, it hadn't changed that much. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, that's correct. It's one of the places where some of the people who live there are actually looking to get away from some of the change happening all around them. Change in places like Seattle and Tacoma or even Spokane or Pullman. I mean, the way Bob describes growing up in Malden, it's this very classic image of small town America.
Before school even started, you knew every kid in town. Everybody was everybody's friend. Once in a while, you'd have a little scuffle, you know, with some of us guys and stuff. But you knew everybody's parents. You knew the name of their pets. You knew what kind of vehicle their parents drove. Nobody locked their doors. There's no reason. In my lifetime here, until this fire, maybe 10 new houses in 60 years.
It seems like that's the best part about Malden in a lot of ways.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the reasons I stayed, because where I've lived the last 45 years, I actually have a street in all four sides of me. You know, you have a lot of room. And, of course, the fire changed a lot of things.
Yeah.
Who else did you meet when you were down there?
So, like Bob, a lot of folks are just looking for their own corner of the American dream. And it's largely for that isolation and affordability, for a quiet and uncomplicated life that few places can offer.
Well, my name's Diana Totten, and I'm an assessor.
I talked to a woman named Diana Totten. She's in a cohort of people who've been in Malden for the last decade.
And what originally brought you here?
My parents. My mom had a heart attack, and she had a quadruple bypass surgery, and I was taking care of her.
And unfortunately, she lost her entire home to the fire.
It was fast. I went outside, and I seen the smoke, and then I went back inside, and then went back out a couple minutes later to look, and then my neighbor told me we're evacuating.
What was going through your mind? I mean, did you grab things?
I thought we'd be back.
Yeah.
Because the fire department's so good out here, you know. They get the fires out every year.
Diana said she's working as an assessor. What does that mean?
So I talked with Diana down at a debris lot outside of town. Since the fire, residents have mostly found work helping out with recovery in some way or another. So Diana's assessing the materials and debris they're clearing from town. And this is an important role because the houses in Malden were built in the early 1900s. So way before a lot of building materials were banned because they're toxic. But clearing debris is also important because getting things like burned trees and rubble out of town goes a long way toward making things feel comfortable again.
It's getting better day by day, you know, as the cleanup, you know, so you're not looking at the stuff because that, you know, that's depressing.
I guess how difficult has it been for you to go through this?
For me, it wasn't so bad as other people because I've been through a lot in my life. You know, I've lost a lot of family and friends. You know, I'm glad there was no deaths. You know, the house can be replaced.
What's the current status of new homes in Malden?
At this point in recovery, there haven't been a lot of new fixtures in town. Everything right now, like extra showers, meeting spaces, main offices, the food bank where I talked to Bob, these are all in kind of modular buildings. But there are two things that have been rebuilt. and those are two houses built by a local Mennonite group. Diana was one of two people chosen to receive one.
How has it felt being one of the first people to get one of those homes?
I felt bad.
Yeah.
I'm like one of the younger people, you know, and there's more disabled people than, you know, me and my family. It's just, it's hard. Because you look at the people in the campers and you got a house, you know.
So it sounds like Diana was having some form of survivor's guilt.
Yeah, and this highlights one of the more complicated parts of recovery. The unfortunate reality is that recovery doesn't happen evenly. So not everyone gets supplies and help at the same time. And for some folks who receive something like a home, it can be difficult to really feel completely comfortable in that home because you know that you now have something while someone else is still having to deal with nothing. One of the other residents I talked to is a woman named Lori, and her situation is similar to Diana in a lot of ways. So she found herself in Malden around the same time, about 10 years ago, and also for similar reasons as Diana. She was taking care of someone, and Malden was an affordable and practical place to settle.
I did live in Rosalia, and my husband was in the Army, and he had gotten Agent Orange. And he passed away 5 years ago. So we got on some land that his buddy owned, and we'd bought from him. Mm-hmm. Well, they gave him a year. He made it 10. Can you believe that?
That's fantastic.
And like Diana, too, Lori lost everything in the fire.
My daughter took a picture, and I was out there digging for my wedding rings and stuff, and I did find some of my diamonds, and for Christmas, they bought me a new set of rings. It was, yeah. Yeah, and I took a picture of that out in my pampers, and it's dirty and digging in the ash and dirt, yeah.
Was there anything you were able to find from your home?
No, no.
And like so many people that I met in Malden, Lori is just this relentless optimist. She just has this ethic about her where anything can be done, and that kind of mentality plays into the way that she views recovery. So I mentioned that there were two new homes built by the Mennonites, and Diana is one, and Lori is the other.
How was that? I mean,
it made me cry, honey. It really made me cry. I think I cried for a couple of days, you know, that I had gotten chosen. But we'd had that. We cleaned our place up. Mm-hmm. Oh, within 2 weeks after the fire, everything, all the ground was done, everything was done. I was very fortunate, and I understand that. But I do a lot of community stuff for people. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm always busy helping somebody or getting something ready for somebody. The less fortunate, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. But I want to make sure that they have every opportunity that the neighbor's got or this neighbor's got. You know, just mm-hmm. because they feel embarrassed or something, they'll come talk to me. I'll go get it taken care of for them. You know, I'm just that kind of person. I mean, just because somebody irritated you over here, you know, you've got to sit down and understand why they're feeling like that.
So, Alec, has the recovery process put up a lot of walls between people in Malden?
Yes and no. In a disaster like this, everyone has to work together to make the community come back. But when you're talking about months and months of painfully slow progress, that mentally wears people down. So the people in charge work as hard as possible to remove bias and randomize the process for major decisions, things like deciding who gets a new house. But even then, it's really easy for people to say that those in charge are playing favorites. So it's really a delicate line for everyone in the community to have to walk.
You're listening to KUOW. I'm Zeki Hamid. This hour, I'm talking with producer Alec Cowan about Malden, Washington, which burned to the ground 1 year ago in a devastating wildfire. So it seems that the community is stepping up to make these improvements. But so far, it seems like the onus for recovery has been put on the survivors and the people of the town. So I'm wondering, where is the federal government in all of this?
That's a great question. And the fire and destruction was one part of the disaster in Malden. But there's a widespread agreement that a secondary disaster was the confusion around when the government was supposed to step in and help, and how much help they'd actually end up bringing. Scott Hokanson, who's a town council member, showed me on a calendar in his office how the targets for recovery were just constantly moving.
I literally thought people would be here in white trucks with trailers, with showers and housing, because we lost everything. So why wouldn't we have that support? If you notice the red marks in September, moving towards October, November, and December are all the hashtags of what, how many months we went without a declaration. So every week I would just put it up because people kept asking me. And for me to be a town council member in one of the smallest communities in Washington state, to be asked what our president's response and why, you know, from the lowest elected official to the highest, you know, being asked to comment is something that's just, to me, was mind boggling. So all I could really do is give dates and times, and, you know, trusted authorities kept telling us it should be any week now. It should be any day now.
And in that uncertainty, misinformation started to spread.
Rumors, right off the bat, rumors.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars coming. You know, they got millions of dollars. Well, where is it? And everybody says, well, where's my cut of this millions of dollars?
People got to a point where it had been so long and they'd heard so many different things that it was hard to really feel motivated to continue rebuilding. They didn't know what was true anymore, and that really hurt the spirit of recovery.
I was very angry and irritated because nothing was getting done. We were told FEMA's going to do this, and all these government organizations or whatever, yeah, we're going to do that. Well, that didn't happen, did it? So everybody had their hopes up. Well, we're going to get some help. Things are going to start rolling. We're going to start regrouping. That's what our mayor was told. That's what Bob was told by government officials. When you got something that's going to lift you up and want you to do something, and all of a sudden the door shuts on you, are you going to want to do anything? No, because he's been taken away.
And the longer it takes for that decision to come through, the more people question whether it's worth staying in Malden. For folks like Lori, this is a town worth rebuilding, however slow and monotonous that process has now become. But for folks like Bob, it's still difficult to be optimistic, especially because it took 5 months for the federal government to step in with any help.
You know, you're sitting here trying to make the town. You're not going to get it back to normal. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get it like it was before. Mm-hmm. You're getting improvements. And that's what we need. We still need the country life. We need the slow down life, okay? That's what it is. Mm-hmm. This town is more for the slow down, lay back, people on limited income. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be better. It's going to be better. They've worked so hard.
In my opinion, we need to get a hub. By that, I mean a city center. You get that, and that's going to make more people interested in actually coming back. Mm-hmm. Some people yet that have moved away from here, and they haven't decided yet what they're going to do. I mean, if you got nothing, but as far as being optimistic or whatever, you know, I don't know. I'd like to see things being done faster. And it's not his fault. It's not my fault. It's not your fault. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is.
The way it is.
You're listening to KUOW. We'll be right back. You're listening to KUOW, I'm Zeki Hamid. And today we're looking at the small eastern Washington town of Malden, which was decimated by a fire 1 year ago. This hour, we've been hearing from town members about not only what they lost, but what they're doing to recover. It took 5 months for Malden to be declared a federal disaster. And next, we're going to explore why that is. So Alec, first responders are always the first on the scene in case of stopping an emergency. But when disaster strikes, who is the first on the scene to kick off recovery?
So the first people on the scene are people like Jerry Bozarth, who's with Spokane County Emergency Management.
My first impression was, because I have never had experience, I've been on wildfires before, but I had never seen fire devastation with homes such as this. this entire town essentially was burned to the ground. I mean, it was very shocking.
What does Jerry determine needs to be done first?
He's looking for immediate needs.
Shelter for people. You know, making sure that people have the basic needs met, because after a devastating fire and you lose your home, you lose everything.
In Malden's case, they begin outreach for essential goods. An unfortunate reality is that lots of residents are on a fixed income, and so few people had fire insurance on their homes, which left them completely dependent on outside help. Responders like Jerry are then looking for trailers that people can stay in. So residents are waiting for the non-immediate needs to be fixed, things the government should be in charge of. But there's a delay in getting that part of recovery moving along.
We couldn't, you know, do anything with roadways. We couldn't do anything with public infrastructure, town halls, things like that. You know, it really affected everything, because there wasn't any way for us to really begin to try to help these people become somewhat whole again.
Why was it delayed? Was there competition for resources?
So in the case of a disaster like Malden's, they're trying to get help through something called a major disaster declaration request. This is when the state has come in, they've looked at the damage, and they've determined that they don't have enough resources to help the situation. They need the federal government to step in and help. And this isn't supposed to be a competitive process.
According to the Code of Federal Regulations, if you qualify based on the criteria that FEMA has put in place, it should be approved. And in my experience, it always has been approved.
So the state puts together this packet with every box checked, every line filled out saying Malden needs emergency help from the federal government. And in this process, that packet makes its way to one person, and only that person can sign and declare federal disaster assistance. And that person is the president. And at this time, that's President Donald Trump. But for whatever reason, he isn't signing the declaration. 1 month turns into two months turns into five. And that's when the second disaster, the response and recovery disaster, really began to hit Malden.
It killed a lot of people's hope, because I kept telling everyone with my experience that this should be coming through any time. So my credibility went down the tubes. And everyone else's credibility, including state emergency management, because they were, you know, working behind the scenes. We had lots of elected officials that said, we're working behind the scenes to try to make this happen. And unfortunately, until we had a changeover in presidents, it didn't happen. So disasters should never be political. And it's sad when they become political for whatever reason.
To find out more about why it took so long for a disaster declaration to be made, we spoke with two people close to the president's decision to not sign a disaster declaration for Malden. We first talked with U.S. Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers. She represents Washington's 5th Congressional District, which Malden is in, and she spoke with the president soon after the fire occurred.
Well, when I visited Malden and Pine City just days after the fire ripped through, it really just took my breath away. Yeah. 85% of the buildings were destroyed in 2 hours. And it was like nothing I'd ever seen before. And as I visited with people, I remember them saying, I hope that you don't forget us after the news cameras leave. And so the first step was to get an emergency and disaster declaration. And I had the opportunity to meet with President Trump and actually show him pictures just a couple of weeks after the fire ripped through these communities and impress upon him the devastation, and to be able to talk to him. And I talked to him several times asking him for that federal declaration. And President Biden also, as soon as he was put in office, clearly too often these rural communities are at a disadvantage when it comes to getting disaster assistance. And so that's why, beyond getting the assistance to the immediate relief, I've introduced legislation called the Malden Act. And it stands for Making Aid for Local Disasters Equal Now Act. And it would address some of the situation in Malden and help other communities in the future.
would love to get into the Malden Act in just a bit, but in speaking with people in Malden, I mean, the disaster was the fire primarily, but the secondary disaster was the delay in any decision on that emergency declaration. So I'm curious, what were President Trump's thoughts when you were impressing upon him the need for the people in Malden?
Well, I too am disappointed that it took so long to get assistance to people living in Malden and Pine City. I worked very hard to talk with President Trump. I had an opportunity to talk with him on a number of occasions. As I mentioned, I showed him pictures of the devastation that I had witnessed on the ground. I consistently urged him to approve the declaration. And whatever the reason was for his delay, it certainly wasn't a result of any effort on my part or my team's part.
So let's actually get into a little bit into the Malden Act. So was the Malden Act a result of that delay? Was that your answer to expedite that process? And can you tell us a little bit about what it is designed to fix?
Yes, the Malden Act is in response to what happened in Malden. And so it does several things. One is that it requires the president to approve or deny a disaster declaration within 30 days. And if that request is denied within 30 days, or if it isn't approved within 30 days, then it's automatically approved. But it also directs FEMA to offer support to affected communities, both with short-term and long-term resources. There was a lot of confusion as to what resources were available from a federal level. And so another part of the act is to make sure that there's caseworkers immediately dispatched when that individual assistance is not made available, or if it's denied, that at least there's caseworkers to walk these individuals through the next steps, because even just getting information was really hard.
I'd love to kind of talk a little bit about what you learned as a representative from this event. What was the main takeaway for you?
First of all, it was like nothing I had seen before to have a fire rip through a community as quickly as it did. And the people really had no time to prepare to evacuate. They were told, evacuate. And it was an immediate evacuation. Typically, with the fires that we've experienced in the past, people are aware that a fire may be getting close and they can start packing and getting ready for a potential evacuation. In this case, it just came so quickly. And in a matter of hours, this community had been destroyed. So that was new. And part of what I learned was just the importance of getting people that are knowledgeable, whether it's from the state or the federal level, in there to help walk these people that have lost everything in a matter of hours, you know, through where to go. Where are they going to sleep? Where, you know, they've just lost everything. And so it was a long list, and making sure that we get the caseworkers in there, that we get people that can really help with that immediate response, was really impressed upon me.
Fires in this area really aren't uncommon anymore. Washington is getting drier. So I'm curious what we can do on a county level to keep this from happening again, or to better prepare for this.
Well, I think we're all learning how to protect homes, in particular the FireWise program that both is being promoted at the local level and the state level, so that people who live close to forest or in areas that may be more vulnerable to catastrophic wildfires, that they can take action around their homes to be fire wise. That's part of it. I believe that we need to do more on better forest management. We're seeing where we just have forests that are more susceptible to fire, that we have disease dying timber. It's 40% of the U.S. Forest Service lands are estimated to be bug infested or disease dying timber. And it's not the legacy that we want to be leaving to the next generation. And we need to do more. But also when we have a fire like this that rips through a community, it's important that we are coming in and helping a community rebuild.
Anything in general with infrastructure in your district, just to kind of mitigate some of the effects of climate change that we're seeing?
Well, one of the areas that we're focusing on, and this is work that we're doing both in the House and the Senate, is to include wildfires when there is in the disaster assistance that's made available at the federal level. A lot of the federal emergency response is based upon hurricanes, and we're working to make sure that wildfires are also included in it, and also the secondary impact that can be associated with a wildfire, whether it's flooding or rock slides or mudslides that happen weeks, days, even years after the initial wildfire.
Some of that secondary impact as well in this situation was recovery. Is there anything in addition to the Maldon Act that you feel would need to be done in the future to avoid a situation like this again?
Yes. Well, the Maldon Act certainly is focused on the initial response. I think the federal government has largely deferred the smaller communities disaster or emergency situations that have less of a financial impact to be handled at the local and the state level. And so when it comes to Maldon, what I see is that there's a lot of coordination that needs to take place. So there's some things that the local community can handle when it comes to rebuilding. There's parts the state is focusing on. I know that the state has helped fund the water system. At the federal level, I've gone to work on the sewer system. What I'm seeing is that it's harder for smaller communities to access some of the funds that are made available at the federal level when it comes to infrastructure, and that we need to be focusing on how do we make sure that smaller rural communities can access funds that are made available, but oftentimes, Maldon doesn't have a grant writer, for example, that is available to help access funds at a federal level.
And how do you know when rebuilding is worth it at that point? I mean, if Maldon burns again from another wildfire, how do you decide if you should rebuild or just move on?
Well, I can tell you that from the very beginning, this community wanted to rebuild. And so it's part of it is a local decision. The people who have lived in Maldon, that call Maldon and Pine City their home, the mayor and the city council, they immediately went to work on rebuilding. And the community has rallied to rebuild and to rebuild better. And so it's really starts at the local level. But we have a commitment now for the post office to be rebuilt. That's going to be a part of the city hall. Because City Hall was lost in the fire, and just putting these pieces back together. It's the sewer system, the water system, but in rebuilding homes, it takes a lot of time. It's a huge undertaking, but I've been inspired as I have visited with the local leaders, the mayor, who is continuing to rally this community, that they are committed to rebuilding Maldon and rebuilding it even better.
From KUOW, I'm Zeki Hamid, here with producer Alec Cowan. We just heard from U.S. Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers on her response to the crisis in Maldon and Pine City. Next, we spoke with Senator Patty Murray about her work with the towns.
I think all of us should just imagine what an impact it would be if we lost our homes, our downtown businesses, the community we lived in, everything we relied on, including the post office, and no one was responding. I immediately got to work and put the entire Washington State Congressional delegation together on a letter, in fact, multiple letters to the Trump administration in support of Governor Inslee's multiple requests for a major disaster declaration.
Why did it take so long?
Well, under the Trump administration, which we were at the time, it was really difficult. It was actually totally unprecedented and really callous move that the administration did not release federal funds for Maldon. I guess it was over President Trump's feud with the governor. That's what I've been told. But I have never seen anything like this in my entire time in the Senate. As we have worked with administrations, Republican and Democrat, for them to hold up federal aid to a community that had been so devastated and to not get them the help and support they did. To note, the minute the Biden administration came into office, this was the first thing I called them about, and 2 weeks later, the Biden administration took action.
And this seems as well like it's an issue of partially resources, but also of process, the process for getting that FEMA declaration. So, I mean, what can be done or will be done in the future to help avoid a similar situation to the one that Malden has had?
Well, I'll tell you, I've been in the Senate a long time. I've been in under Republican administrations, Democratic administrations. Never have I seen anything like this. And I frankly don't ever expect it to happen again. I think that all of us have an obligation to make sure that when a community, whether it's Malden or someone else, is impacted so devastatingly, that we move forward in every way we can. I don't ever expect this to happen again.
What makes you so sure that something like this wouldn't happen again? It's already happened once.
Well, I think that's an anomaly. And I believe the Trump administration was acting irresponsibly. Honestly, I think Americans are better than that. I think future presidents will be better than that. And I expect them and will hold them accountable to that.
So Congress member Kathy McMorris-Rogers introduced the Malden Act back in June, a bill that is meant to circumvent the problems that occurred in Malden as a result of this long delay. So I'm wondering, have you looked at the Malden Act and what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I've seen the bill. I am working on how we can best help the community rebuild and moving forward. And I can say that I absolutely want to ensure that every community in Washington State and the country really gets the emergency funds and federal support they deserve when a need arises.
But the Malden Act itself, are you in support of that?
We're looking at the language of that. We want to make sure that the impacts aren't the opposite of what is intended. We have to be very careful when we write legislation like that.
So what does Washington need to do to prepare for future disasters like Malden?
Well, I think we're all watching the devastating impacts of wildfires and need to make sure that we are, as we now are working on, making sure that we've got the resources at the federal level. In fact, the bipartisan infrastructure bill that we passed out of the Senate and the House will act on invests $8 billion in wildfire risk reduction. It does it by providing funding for community wildfire defense grants, mechanical thinning, controlled burns, and a number of other things that we need to do to prevent wildfires. And we have to make sure we're changing the ground conditions. I think we all know that our forests are the world's most dangerous tinderboxes, and our communities need to be better equipped with these the weather patterns we're seeing and the climate action that we need to take.
Excellent. Well, let's just end with this one question here. How can those who suffer at the hands of a disaster like the Malden fire have faith that the government can help with recovery in the future?
Well, I hope that the actions of myself and the rest of the delegation show people in Malden that people care about them. I have to tell you, I am really impressed with the people of Malden, their determination, their optimism in the face of all they are gone through. They are what inspire me and so many other people. And everyone is working hard to get them back on their feet and get them what they need, and will continue to do so.
That was Senator Patty Murray on wildfire recovery efforts. You're listening to KUOW. We'll be right back. You're listening to KUOW. I'm Zeki Hamid. This hour, I'm talking with producer Alec Cowan about Malden, Washington, which burnt to the ground 1 year ago in a devastating wildfire. The town had to wait 5 months before being declared a federal disaster. We just heard from two Washington Congress members about their plans to prevent future crises in the recovery from a disaster. But Alec, what are Malden's plans for the future?
So the last person I talked to was Mayor Dan Harwood. And since recovery began, he's really been one of the major workhorses in rebuilding the town. And that's mostly because he's got this incredible background. He's local, he grew up nearby, and he's also a trained firefighter.
First time I fought fire was when I was 10 or so with a gunny sack to protect a barn. Started on the Malden Fire Department in 98, I believe, and became chief in 2000. retired in 2016. I'm back on it.
I spoke with Mayor Harwood on his front porch about his experience of the fire. There's this creek that runs alongside Malden, and his house is the only one on the other side. And he told me this story of how he was helping find exit routes out of the fire, and in the process, he became separated from his own family.
I took a drive. I looked at the smoke. I'm an ex-fire chief, and I knew what was happening. I read the smoke as I was trained. I came down. I put sprinklers on the roof, gathered the computers, the guns. Tam was making cabbage rolls, big batch of them. And, you know, typically our fire departments are able to take care of this. I went back uptown to fill water trucks, and I ended up working with Scott, going house to house. Put a little fire out at the fire station. I thought that would stop it. The sheriff said it's time to leave. And I left. And about that time, my son came by, and I told him in no uncertain terms that if he had to pick your mom up, put her in the car, grab the cat and dog, it's time to leave. Another friend came by to help her, and all four of them got trapped down here. They spent the entire fire out on our alfalfa flat between here and the creek. Her brother busted through the smoke and the flames with his fire truck and put our house out.
And at this point, Dan wasn't even the mayor of Malden. It wasn't until after the fire, when the then mayor resigned, that he took up that responsibility.
How long have you been mayor for?
8 months.
8 months.
December 1.
Have you ever thought of yourself as becoming a mayor?
Long time ago, I wrote on a piece of paper, signed it, and dated it to my wife that I would never, ever, ever run to be mayor. And when this happened, she took it off the wall and crumpled it up and threw it away. And I turned myself into this job.
And it isn't easy. He was putting in 70 to 80 hour weeks until his family actually asked him to take more time for himself. So now he jokes that he's only working 40 hour weeks. But he's been one of the central connectors between Malden and what's become really a nationally recognized disaster. And for him and so many others, the idea that their name would be at the center of something like the Malden Act, you know, national legislation, it's surreal because now they get to look at how they can help the next Malden instead of just being the ones in need.
The day that we got accepted by FEMA for a public assistance, Senator Murray called me personally, and I thought to myself, you know, here's a little kid from Ewan, Washington, talking to a state senator. And that's when, between her and shortly after, Kathy McMorris Rogers called, and I put the two together and made it my mission to try and communicate to our citizens that we're not alone, that our system is working. It, you know, it was slow, extremely frustrating, but they are here to help. Mm-hmm. You know, the old saying, hello, I'm from the government, I've come to help. They really are trying to help. And in the state of Washington, nobody's gone through this much of a disaster as we have. You know, we sympathize with those that folks from Ozo when that disaster happened. And now British Columbia. One of the first things after the fire is I sent their mayor a message that we were here to assist in any way you wanted. Scott did the same thing, and neither one of us knew that the other was going to do it. That's how much we've depended on folks, and that's how much we want to pay it forward. Yeah.
It seems like Mayor Harwood is another relentless optimist in Malden. But what does he see as the foundation for this new Malden being built?
He is an optimist, And in this situation, it would be so incredibly easy to leave Malden. Every major municipal building is gone. It's a town of around 400 people with Pine City. Infrastructure was old and decaying. It would be understandable if this was the end of a town like Malden. But Mayor Harwood understands that this is a new chapter in his town's history. And that means inviting people into a community that's traditionally been pretty isolated. It means inviting change.
Think about what our little town has to offer. We're 45 minutes away from Spokane. We're 45 minutes away from Pullman. We've got the beautiful Palouse to Cascades trail. We've got our community church, that the only public building that didn't burn. We have faith here more than most little towns, because we've lived through the fire and we survived, and we're going to survive. So we welcome folks to look at our town for expansion.
I mean, what do you hope for Malden, you know, the spirit of the place going forward?
Not to lose it. Think of it like a covered wagon. In the early days when Scott and I started this, Scott came up with the analogy that we are wagon masters and we're in Malden, Washington to start a town. And how is it going to look in 3 years? How's it going to look in 5 years?
Man, I love the mayor's optimism here, but the town is rebuilding in a place where fire is increasingly common. So are they building fire resistance into this new Malden? And are they worried about what a second wildfire could do to the town?
The answer to that is one of the silver linings to the fire as well. All the new buildings in Malden will be made to be fire resistant, with things like metal roofs and smart landscaping. Homes will be better spaced apart, so there's less likelihood of a conflagration. The community now understands how fire moves through town and where things went wrong in this situation, so they're building in new fire lines around town. The resources from recovery will rebuild a more protected and sustainable Malden. And they're, of course, worried. Nobody wanted this disaster to happen. But the fact of the matter is that this is an unprecedented opportunity for Malden, a place where change is measured in decades rather than months. This is a chance to recreate the town they love in a way that would have been unfeasible before the fire. And I asked Jerry Bozarth from Emergency Management about this. We were standing in the city park, which is empty except for some tall ponderosa pines, and this old 1950s playground, which was probably here the last time Malden went through a monumental change. And I asked him, "You've seen so many disasters. How often are you seeing communities use these moments to return, improve, and chart a new course?" He sees it frequently, and he sees it here in Malden and Pine City, Washington.
Not that any disaster is good, but there is opportunity after a disaster to make things better. And, you know, everyone, you know, really needs to work together. The community, government, voluntary organizations, act of a disaster, and others, faith-based groups that can work together to improve, not to let it die, but to, how can we bring this back, but bring it back even better? And there is a real opportunity here to bring it back better, because there's so much support from so many organizations and from the state and from those that want to see the town continue on.
Thanks, Alec, for bringing us this incredible story. And we asked you about your experiences in natural disasters and how you would rebuild your town. This is what we heard.
Hi, my name is Sylvia Flores, and I am calling from Napa, California. What would I start with? I would start with schools. A school can be used for temporary shelter in gymnasiums, for example. It can offer food distribution, charging stations, internet access, and community rooms to create breakout spaces for people to come and problem solve together. And I think building the community not where it once was before the disaster, but surpassing the known issues it had previously. A wildfire or a natural disaster is an opportunity for a town or city to start anew and don't build back what it was, and be also the blueprint for other cities to follow.
My name is Nye. If I had to rebuild a town afterward, I would first ask whether it's worth rebuilding, if the area is a major fire risk. Two, if there is a way in rebuilding a town design in a fire break, kind of a built-in fire break all around the perimeter of the town. Three homes and commercial buildings with fire-resistant materials.
We also received many written responses. Here are a few. Alex from Mercer Island said, "Probably emergency buildings, hospitals, fire, and police stations. Then I would move on to schools, religious places of worship, community centers, or any places where many community members gather."
Margie from Seattle said, "My mother had a house fire and lost family photos. I recommend everyone store photos in the cloud or on a thumb drive and send duplicates to family in another town."
And finally, another listener said, "I've been through a Category 5 typhoon, which destroyed thousands of homes, ruined livelihoods, and took many lives, both human and livestock." The answer, of course, is that you cannot outwit nature. The more irresponsible the use of resources, the more wild the disaster consequences will be.
And to the folks that are listening, we want to hear from you. What questions do you still have about this story? What did we get right? And what could we have done better? Please let us know by sending us an email to engage@kuow.org. This show was produced by Brandy Fullwood, Sarah Leibovitz, and Alec Cowan. I'm Zeki Hamid. From all of us at KUOW, please be kind to each other and have an excellent day.